Y'all, I've got something super special for you this week. It's the very first episode of Homeschool Conversations, only it's never actually shown up in this podcast feed. Way back in February 2020, I did a video interview with my friend Matt Miner. I had so much fun chatting with Matt that I decided to make recording interviews a regular thing. And before you know it, we got where we are today, with over 180 episodes and nearly 300,000 podcast downloads. But while the video of my chat with Matt has been around for a while, the audio never actually was published here on Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology. Thankfully, Matt recently sent me the audio file, including a bit of a bonus update since things are a wee bit different than they were in 2020. And now you get to listen in. Now, remember, this is before I even had a microphone and definitely before I knew what I was doing. So don't judge too harshly, okay? But the conversation really was so good, and the content continues to be relevant and helpful for homeschool families at any stage. I know you're going to come away with lots of great tips as we discuss budgeting for homeschool families. Oh, and if you want to listen to more homeschooling goodness from the Miner family, check out my interview with Charity Miner. That episode is called Classical Conversations and Couch Schooling, and the link is in the description. So give this episode a listen, and while you're here, would you take a minute to leave a rating and review for the podcast in your app? It really does help. Thank you so much. And happy homeschooling. Welcome to Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology, a series of interviews with real-life homeschool moms, dads, and other educators on all sorts of topics that affect our lives as homeschool parents. I'm Amy Sloan, a second-generation homeschool mom of five, and I am so delighted that you are here. Here on Homeschool Conversations, we'll discuss educational philosophy, family life, and more. Come chat with us. Hello, everyone. My name is Amy Sloan. I am a wife, a mom of five, and a second-generation homeschooler. You can find me online at humilityanddoxology.com. I'm so excited to be joined by my friend, Matt Miner.
Hey, good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Thanks for coming. Matt earned his MBA at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business with concentrations in marketing and general management, and his undergrad degree from Arizona State University in finance. Matt's focus is helping others to do a great job managing their money. His love of personal finance grew out of his family's journey to repay nearly $250,000 in student loans.
That was way too much.
That's crazy, but kudos to you. They did this within about 3 years of completing graduate school. Since then, Matt has worked to provide resources and coaching in this important area. Matt lives here in Raleigh with his friend, with his wife, my friend, Charity.
And she's my friend too, for a long time.
That's right, lifelong friend. And their three amazing children, Lucy, Josh, and Ben. Matt loves spending time with his family, writing, running, hunting, doing carpentry projects around the house. And you can read more about Matt and his thoughts on money at designindependence.com. So, Matt, we heard a little bit of your story there in that bio.
But a lot of it, really.
A lot of it. But could you share a little bit more about your family, your homeschool, and your family's history with this whole, like, budgeting, finance?
Yeah. Well, look, Amy, thank you so much for having me on today. It is just a pleasure to be here at Humility and Doxology, and hopefully to provide some value to your readers, and I guess for this call anyway, to your listeners. My family is, like Amy said, we have three children. My wife, Charity, and I have been married for almost 19 years. I should be able to just rattle that off, but it'll be 19 years this year. And our kids, Lucy, Josh, and Ben, have been homeschooled for the last 10 plus years. They're 14, 12, and 11. And so we have only and always homeschooled. And we have also done a lot of that homeschooling through the Classical Conversations community in Durham, North Carolina, and have had a lot of our homeschool resources and kind of experience through Classical Conversations. So that's been a good fit for us. You know, from the standpoint of our history with budgeting, my history with budgeting was kind of sorted until about 2010. And then it's been a lot more ticked and tied since then that kind of enabled some of that progress that you talked about. And then even more recently is what enabled me to make a switch from the corporate work that I'd been doing post-business school to working as a financial advisor, helping other families do a good job with their money. So I'm what's called a fiduciary fee-only financial advisor. And I have my CFP now and have been doing this for about 2 years. My firm, PLC Wealth Management, works with about 200 families, most in North Carolina, but I also have clients all around the country and even some global consulting clients. So that's kind of what I'm about. And I think it's going to be fun to go through these questions. I definitely have opinions about homeschooling and money, and hope that the conversation will be super helpful to your readers. Awesome.
Well, we love strong opinions around here. So let's start sort of with a basic big picture question, because sometimes people feel overwhelmed just even by the idea of a budget, or the term budgeting feels scary or like it's super complicated. So when you say budget, what do you mean by budget? Why is it important? And are there any common misconceptions around budgeting?
Yeah, so I think that there are common misconceptions around budgeting. I guess when we say budget, you know, I like Dave Ramsey's definition on this as well as anywhere. He says it's telling your money where to go rather than wondering where it went. How you do it is less important than that you do it, and that you do it as a team approach between husband and wife, and as they grow up, even involving your children, is, I think, really desirable. I tend to think of this in two main ways. One I would call the detailed budget, and one I would call the anti-budget. If you're just getting started, it's probably great to think about the detailed budget, which is where you literally look at every dollar that's coming in, start with your gross income, show the taxes, any benefits that you may have withheld from your check, and get all the way down to your take-home pay. By literally starting at the gross income level, you may notice that you signed up for a benefit that you never use, and that may be a chance to get rid of that. Okay, so then you got your take-home pay, and from there, you know, as a Christian, we would always start with the tithe at the very top. And then because we want to think about these things in the right way, we would then look at saving and investment as the next thing after giving. And then whatever's left over after that, we would look at, you know, allocating to various spending categories. And the way you'd want to do that is you take your best stab at it, and then you literally track it dollar for dollar. And, you know, when you talk about people feeling that budgeting is intimidating, the huge reason is that that's a really big project, what I just described. And maybe the hope that I can offer on that is if a family will engage in that for 2 to 4 months and really do that, they will then have an accurate picture of what they're currently doing, and then maybe can begin to move towards what I'm going to talk about next, which is the anti-budget. And in the anti-budget, you just set budget categories at the highest level, and you fill those buckets up with your income, and you don't have to track everything at a dollar for dollar level, as long as, and this is the key, you can't be borrowing money or accessing savings to top things off if your anti-budget isn't working. And so
that's not really a budget.
It's not really a budget. And so as long as you're not adding new debt or tapping savings, a great anti-budget, I would call it the 10, 20, 20, 50 budget. And that would be 10% towards giving, 20% towards savings and investing, 20% towards fun things that you enjoy, whatever those are, and then 50% towards your general lifestyle expenses. On a budget like that, you're saving way more than the average American. And by the way, it's fine if you're in a debt repayment phase to think of that 20% as being a debt repayment target, because 20%, first of all, it's a big number. And second of all, debt repayment is like savings. And then, you know, if you were trying to mess around with those numbers to make them bigger, I would urge you to consider trying to drive that 50% number down. I think keeping giving high, keeping savings and investing high, and keeping fun high are good. And so if you want to try to raise those other categories, then see if you can't fit your lifestyle into 45% of what you earn or something like that. How would you like to follow up, Amy? Those are a couple budgets.
No, that's really helpful. And I guess what I hear you saying is that I think a lot of people think that for a budget, there's like a bunch of specific rules they have to follow, or like an app they need to get, or some intricate envelope system. And they just don't even think about it because that feels overwhelming. But what I hear you saying is that being purposeful and being on the same page with your spouse is really kind of the foundation of budgeting.
I could have given a much shorter answer. be purposeful and be on the same page with your spouse. Yeah. And actually what you say highlights an important point. A lot of people, when they want to talk about budgeting, they want to talk about, what's the best app or something like this. And really it's about having that intentionality, creating that plan, and then figuring out what works for your family. You know, in our family, that's always been a mix of like Excel. And then my wife, Charity, likes to sit down on the couch with pencil and paper. And so I start with the Excel, and then we go to pencil, and then we go back to the Excel.
Yeah.
that's the way it works for us.
We use Excel too, you know, you just put in the formulas and it kind of takes care of itself.
Yep. You know, and you asked about common misconceptions. I think you've addressed them with just like thinking in terms of, on the one hand, it needs to be real and right. On the other hand, you don't need to make it harder than necessary. And it will feel hard for the first one and two times, especially if you can persevere and get to times three and four, let alone times 30 and 40, it will seem much easier.
Yeah. Like many things, as we practice, we get better at them and it comes more naturally.
That's right.
I feel like you're having to build the new habit.
We tell our children first time, worst time. It's true for grownups too.
Yes, for sure. Okay. So my audience is primarily homeschool families.
Yeah.
So thinking specifically within the specific challenges that come in the homeschooling family world, what are some key first steps a homeschool family can take to bring order to their budget?
Yeah. Boy, it's like a lot of things. There are many things I could say, some that I kind of jotted down before our call. I think it's always good to put your giving first, if that's something that you're focused on in your family. And then beyond giving, to pay yourself first in terms of your saving and investing habits, whatever amount that's going to be. It's generally really helpful to automate everything you can. So the only bills that you should want to receive in the mail are ones that for some reason you think you want to review or negotiate. Everything else should just be coming out automatically, and that'll free up, you know, if you're not having to think about how to pay your bills, it'll free up brain space to think about creative ways to make your budget better or something like that. In my personal experience, switching from credit cards to cash and debit cards is hugely impactful. It will have an automatic effect of driving your spending down. When we first got clued into this budgeting stuff, we had a set of expenses that was all on predominantly one American Express credit card. And when we switched that same set of expenses to using cash for it, we dropped the same expenses from $2,400 to $1,600 a month just by changing how we were paying. So again, for us, adding that extra friction to the spending was meaningful. We talked about this in the last question, but making a plan before the month begins and then tracking yourself against that plan. And then this is one I run into all the time with clients. People don't seem to think about a lot, but to allow yourself a miscellaneous category for things that you just failed to anticipate or wanted to do. I was on another show and talking about this, and she was like, it's like a mini emergency fund within your budget. So if you want to think of it that way, a good level for this would be like 5 to 10% of gross income. And so if you're running on a $5,000 a month budget, a $250 to $500 miscellaneous category for things you just forgot about or want to do in the moment, or just come up, like the dishwasher we were talking about before, that's a good place to have that. And so, yeah, that's something that's helpful, because otherwise the budget just becomes too rigid.
Yeah, I find this a lot when I talk to homeschool families, actually, about planning their time. Because a lot of times you plan out your time to the very extreme edges and you leave no white space in there. So one kid gets sick or the dishwasher broke, like happened at my house, or, you know, somebody needs a little extra help with their math and it's thrown your entire day off. Yeah. Whereas if you just gave yourself that margin and kind of expected the unexpected to begin with, it ends up making it a lot less stressful day to day. So same kind of thing with your money.
Man, so wise, Amy. It's the Sabbath principle for money.
Yes, exactly. I love it. Okay, so thinking again, still sort of this homeschool family thing, I don't know a lot of homeschool families that are, you know, trying to keep up with the Joneses and comparing fancy yachts and houses, but it's really easy, whether with the homeschooler next door, down the street, or on social media, you're seeing families doing all sorts of really cool classes and co-ops and subscription boxes, and there's those library book sales that really get me. So how can we provide a quality education to our children, which is really important to invest in that? while not sacrificing our financial independence and still making wise choices with our money long term.
Your readers all know homeschooling isn't cheap, but it's also not easy. And so if you can figure out the homeschool part, this money thing is not that bad. You know, I thought a little bit about how to come at this question that you shared with me. I feel like a quality homeschool education looks different for each family, but in terms of how you might think about, first of all, budgeting for homeschool, if you've never done it before, assume you can do it fairly cheaply because like anything, it costs what you want it to cost. And so start with cheap and then notice where the pain points are and add over time services or resources that may be helpful to your homeschool. If you have been spending money on homeschool already and you have sort of a baseline and you can then have a sense of probably whether that baseline is uncomfortably high for you or maybe you have a lot of unnecessary pain in your homeschooling because you're running around to libraries in three counties trying to do it all for free, you know, then add some money to it and kind of go from there. You can spend any amount, little or high, on homeschooling. You know, families that I know who are in sort of ordinary financial circumstances, it seems to me that they're spending somewhere between several hundred dollars per kid per year to a couple thousand dollars per kid per year. You're still at that rate, you know, ignoring the economic value of the homeschool parents' time. You're still way below private education in terms of what you're putting towards this. And of course, obviously, since we do it in our family, we think it's a great way to go. Maybe if your readers are anything like my wife sometimes is, interacts with other homeschoolers on social media and or other homeschool families. And just remember, everybody's not posting every picture of all the disasters that go on. There just wouldn't be enough time in the day to do all that. So what you're seeing on Facebook does not represent the entire picture. Yeah. I don't know. How, what else can I say?
No, that's 100%, especially as I've kind of gotten in the online world over the past few years. You know, you peek behind the curtain at all these people's lives and everybody just has their own struggles.
What if I told you that there was a way to incorporate freedom into your homeschool planning? A way to blend flexibility and a well-ordered day. Homeschool planning doesn't have to be scary. I have created a free homeschool planning guide to help you ask the right big picture questions to set your long-term homeschool goals, and it will also give you 7 simple steps to craft a peaceful, orderly homeschool plan. If you want access to this free ebook, just head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-planning-guide or just click the link in the show notes.
You know, you brought up every family is doing things differently. Mm-hmm. It's going to look different. I mean, even a couple $100 per kid to a couple $1,000, like that's a really big range, a wide range.
Sure.
And so for people to not feel the pressure, oh, if I don't do what that family is doing, like my kids are missing out or I'm not a good homeschool mom or whatever.
No. Yeah, never feel that way. And,
easier said than done.
Yeah, and I fall into the same thing. Probably not in homeschool because like I'm a homeschool dad. I'm not a homeschool mom. I think it's different. But don't neglect, there can be income opportunities along the way in this homeschool thing. For us in classical conversations, we've usually found that we're able to do it pretty much as a wash with the income that my wife is able to earn from that or maybe even earn a few dollars. And so again, that doesn't account for what the value of her time could be outside the home. But since we're committed to how we're doing school, then it's nice to at least have the direct expenses of homeschool covered. You're in this world more than I am, but Teen Moms do a tremendous job with things like thrift sales and with online businesses such as your own, as long as they're real and not somebody else's scam and, you know, all kinds of things like that. So again, you're creative enough to school your children this way. Your readers are creative enough to do that. There's a world of opportunity out there alongside the expenses.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this question, kind of gearing away from the homeschool specific part. But mm-hmm. as I asked the question on social media, like, what are some questions you want me to ask this person I'm going to be interviewing? So many people brought up the grocery budget. Yeah. And I think that can be a hard thing to even know what is reasonable to expect, like what's a reasonable expectation to have for the budget, because a lot of estimates don't seem to take into account that we have these larger than average family sizes, yeah, and we're home all day, every day. And my kids seem to have a hard time doing math without a snack. So, you know, how do we even kind of know like what's reasonable? How do we set a good goal there?
I put a little thought into this before we talked, because this is one of those budget categories where, yeah, it can be a killer. And if you've got a big family, it's going to be big. And it changes over time. And it depends on where you live. Just to give you some idea of how much it can change, in my own family, when we were really crazy about the budget and paying off the student loan debt, we had this thing down to like $550 or $600 a month with three kids. But wow, those three kids were like 4, 3, and 1 or something like that at the time. And we were living in the Midwest, and it was 2010. So it was like in the midst of the economic catastrophe. Whereas now we've got kind of a booming economy. There's a little more inflation out there anyway. There's not all these cheap things going on the same way that they were. And probably in many ways, we're all thankful for that. Employment prospects are also much better. But we now have months where we'll peak out at like as much as $1,300 a month. And the kids are now teenagers. If we get real careful about it, we can maybe drive that down to like $900 or $950 in a good month. But that's still a ton of money. So here's my thought about this economically. I think if you can hit $5 to $7 per person per day, you're doing well. So with a family of three near teenage kids like mine, that would be a range of $750, which I think would be very hard for us to hit, but would be doable, of $750 to $1,050 per month. And if your kids are smaller than mine, maybe you can be on the lower end of that. And if your kids are bigger than mine, you might be another $100 or $200 a month higher than that. Of course, it depends on how you eat. And I mean, if you really ate nothing but dried rice and beans, but many in our circles are also looking to eat in certain healthy ways, including meat and vegetables and things like that. So that's where I think a good range is. And then I do have some particular thoughts on hitting that range if you want me to go on, but
please do. Yeah.
Okay. So I think figuring out what you buy, where you buy, how you buy it, and how you use it. We've never been coupon clippers, but we're big fans of figuring out which store to go to. So we just happen to know that like for bulk purchases, Costco is where it's at, as long as you stick to your list. For consumer packaged goods, Walmart is typically dominant. For low volume, fresh stuff, Food Lion or your inexpensive Aldi or whatever is a good place to look for that. And then, you know, how you buy it. Here again is one where like setting and sticking to your budget, either using the debit card or even using cash for this category, I think is helpful. And then how you use it, force yourself to stretch the inventory and like don't let if the fridge is just full all the time and you're throwing stuff away from wasting it, you know, that's not great. And so by having a leaner inventory, you'll be more likely to move through your food and not have waste. And then you'll just find things that work for your family. An example of this for us, we'll buy a Costco rotisserie chicken. It's actually cheaper cooked than it is raw. And then we'll eat the meat and salad, and then we'll make soup out of the carcass or whatever. And so these are just ways you can find a stretch. I there's nothing that I can tell a group of homeschool moms about how to do this.
I think all of us know that rotisserie chicken. I'm like, it's like free chicken broth. I mean, not really free because we paid for the chicken, but
yep, just add salt.
That's right. I've actually found that the Walmart grocery pickup, which does not cost anything extra, so they don't charge a fee for the pickup.
Okay.
And I can see a running total of how much I'm spending. Mm-hmm. And then you're not like walking by the aisle like, ooh, the chocolate chips are on sale, and you end up with stuff you didn't intend to come home with.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, Amy. It's like a convenience factor that actually adds control rather than taking away control. Exactly. That's great. Oh,
I love it. Yeah.
Good tip. I've never done the Walmart pickup. I'm kind of a technology Luddite.
I always said I would never do it, but it has changed my life this past year. So I'm a big believer in it now.
Yeah, I think the difference, we only have the small Walmart near us. So our Walmart is not a grocery store.
That's really tragic. I'm sorry.
I don't know if it rises to that level, but it is a fact.
Okay, well, let's think now towards the future. We're used to an outside-the-box approach to education, and we also want to give our children as many options as possible. I often tell my kids, like, I don't know what God has for you in the future, but my job is to give you options. So what are some ways that we can be doing now to save and to help our children financially for college, or like maybe they're not going to go to college, for whatever the future might hold?
Yeah, you touched on this so well, in that we are, you know, we're raising adults, not children. And our job is to raise them to have many options, and then to have the capacity of character to make wise and loving choices. I think that the framework here maybe has two main things, in my opinion. The first is that you need to make sure that you are taking care of yourself. And I don't mean that in a selfish way, but that your own personal finances are on a stable trajectory, such that you're not going to be either a source of worry or a source of burden to your children at a future time, whether that's in the near future or in the far future. You know, said bluntly, some level of retirement savings, I would say like at least 10% or more, and not having debt are higher priorities than any kind of financial savings for your children, whether that's thinking in terms of legacy gifts, or whether that's thinking in terms of paying for post-secondary education. Take care of yourself first. I guess this is the put on your own oxygen mask before you help others portion there. Okay, so then as far as the kids themselves go, I think teaching them the framework to earn, give, save, and spend, and just giving them those basic budgeting tools. They can earn through employed work, whether as babysitter or grass mower or leaf raker. They can earn through launching their own business. You know, they have the luxury of time, which parents don't, to put into that. They don't need a high hourly rate, but they can learn skills through their business. So I think teaching them about earning capacity is really important. And then when it comes to college savings, whether it's because my own, you know, financial services industry pushes this, or just because of parents' tendency to be concerned about whether they're doing it right, you know, and wanting to immediately think about 529 investing and stuff like this. 529s are great. If you're clearly filling up all of your other buckets, they can offer a tool for saving for college for your kids. They need to be thought of as luxury investing. What you're doing in their lives is a lot more important. Even when there is sufficient resources to begin doing some of that 529 investing, I like people to think of these in terms of funding them at a level of not more than 50 to 75% of the total budgeted cost. And even if you're at like 25% of the total budgeted cost, I'm talking a lot, but like here, a quick framework on that is, even for full boat in-state tuition here in our state, and it's fairly expensive. So if you were to take like $20,000 as a fully loaded UNC tuition right now, a child through hustle can earn $10,000 a year. That's not easy, but it's not by any means undoable. That's $5,000 in the summer and $5,000 over the course of 9 months. And then meanwhile, if you have saved, and this is in today's dollars, so it'll be different in the future, but your money will have grown as well. So in today's dollars, if you had saved $20,000 for that child, that would be $5,000 a year that you could put from your savings towards that. And then the other $5,000 could either come from current cash flow or from some other creative way of doing that. And so, you know, on the one hand, you look at it just on paper and you're like, oh my goodness, it's going to be $80,000 to $100,000 just to send my child to in-state tuition. But if you kind of break it down the way that I just described there, I think most people go, you know, I could save $20,000 between now and the time they go to school for my kid's school, and they could earn $10,000 a year, and then we'll figure out the other $5,000. So
yeah, that kind of gives just some good perspective, because I think you do. I mean, there's all the like crazy headlines where you see all this future of education costs, and you just sort of like are like, ah,
right, you just curl up into a ball, right? What can you do with this?
But you're like, hey, this is manageable, let's not make it a crisis. So that's
and that's paying full boat. You know, you can then quickly, again, in our circles, look at things like dual enrollment, do a couple years at a community college. Now you've cut that $80,000 figure in half, and so now you're down to half of those numbers that I just illustrated, for example.
Makes such a big difference.
Big difference. Yep.
And you talked a little bit in there, you were mentioning how you can kind of give that, you know, earning, giving, saving kind of framework to our children. Yeah. Are there any ways that you would encourage families to help kids get a vision for taking care of their money, earning it now and saving for the future? Or do you have a go-to resource that you would recommend? Yeah,
I don't. It's like, I don't think it's a trick. I think it's just something that you do over time. You can think of it as part of your homeschool, as part of what you're teaching your children.
Or parenting.
Your parenting, yeah. And so I think you may have people in your life that you can enlist to support you in this. You know, I'll give you an example. I always offer to clients that if they have a child that they would like to bring into a meeting, I would love to talk to that child about that child's financial plan. Like, what are you doing to earn, save, spend, and give? So that's one example. You may have a family member who would be willing to support your efforts in this just by having a conversation. We've done some things at our co-op. There's a project, it's called like Project 23, that asks the kids to imagine their life at age 23 and put together a plan for that. You can certainly create something like that on your own. Dave Ramsey definitely has some resources out there related to talking to kids about money. And I think they're probably as good as anything. I think it's his daughter. Rachel Cruz has maybe a whole book on that she wrote with her dad. And I have not read it. I think it's one that's on my shelf that I haven't read. Money I could have saved.
The library.
Well, it's in the library. I don't know. Those are a few thoughts, Amy.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, how about for adults in the books or resources in the, you know, financial realm? Yeah. Let's think like kind of two different things. One, we have somebody, a beginner, mm-hmm. maybe they're in debt and, mm-hmm. or they have never had any experience or training and this is all new to them. Where would you send those people? And then maybe people who are, okay, we kind of have a bit of an idea of what we're doing, but we really want to get even better. And where would you put them?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the trouble. When you invite me to come speak and ask for three, I bring six. So awesome. There you go. For the beginners, in my opinion, there's no better motivation book than Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover, especially if you're in debt. That's the why pay off debt, why care about your money book. Some people find Ramsey completely unpalatable. If that's you, I guess you should skip it. But that was the book that started us on our journey. I still think it's quite good. The companion book to that, if you are in control of your money, would be The Automatic Millionaire by David Bach. And that's all about automation and how to set that up in your finances. To move then to like the intermediate or advanced options, there is a book, I actually just recently gave a bunch of copies of this away to folks in our homeschool co-op, called The Simple Path to Wealth by Jim Collins. I have not read this one cover to cover, and I'm going to qualify these next intermediate advanced options by saying, actually, all of these books have a specifically non-Christian worldview. Okay. I just find them good books. So The Simple Path to Wealth by Jim Collins, Your Money or Your Life by Vicki Robbins. If you want to like go down the minimalism crazy path, she has good motivation there. And then if you're like me and you like to laugh and you also are not overly offended by profanity, Mr. Money Mustache's blog is a great place to dive into the frugality, financial independence space. He actually writes about homeschooling from time to time. His son has done both homeschooling and traditional schooling, but he is an entertaining writer and his articles run the gamut. So those would be my intermediate or advanced options. And then for kids, I came up with two. There's a classic book, it's from the 20s. It's more in the prosperity mindset space. So I have maybe some reservations on it, but I've had my kids read it. It's called The Richest Man in Babylon. And the author there is, I don't know if it's pronounced Clason or Clason, but Clason. And then by the same author as The Automatic Millionaire, this is another book that I just gave away a bunch of copies in our homeschool co-op, is The Latte Factor by David Bach. And that one is about a young woman who has left home. I don't remember if she's post-college. I think she's probably post-college, and she begins to interact with a low-key millionaire next door type entrepreneur who teaches her some things about money. And so it's a novel that's written in a narrative format, and it's short.
Well, so. Those are all great. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom. I hope this is really an encouragement to many. And where can people find you around the web?
Thanks for that, Amy. A lot has changed since February 2020, when we first recorded this interview. The world was on the cusp of the COVID era, and on my end, my podcast has changed, and I've launched my own financial planning and wealth management business. So, you can find me at workpantsfinance.com, where I share my thoughts on life, work, and money, or at minerwealth.com, spelled M-I-N-E-R, wealth.com, where I help families build wealth and avoid the wage slave trap. And this is a great place to say that inflation has taken a big bite out of purchasing power for groceries, something like 30 plus percent since we made our recording. So to help families navigate higher food prices, I updated an article I wrote called Hacking the Grocery Bill, available at workpantsfinance.com/resources, with thoughts on what to buy and where to buy it so you can feed your family healthy food at the best possible prices. Finally, stick around 5 more minutes for a bonus mini episode about how you, as a parent and homeschool teacher, can help your kids get started with earning, giving, saving, spending, banking, and payments. Enjoy. Good morning, Humility and Doxology readers, viewers, and listeners. This is Matt Miner back again without the benefit of Amy Sloan as my host. She and I had such a fun conversation talking about money in a homeschool family context. There were two important examples that I forgot to share as it relates to kids and money, which is definitely one of my passions in this homeschool endeavor. The first is something we've used in our family called Bank of Dad. In Bank of Dad, we pay 10% on all money deposited there up to a maximum deposit of $1,000. Now, the thing about this is that the 10% interest is so different than anything that they can get in a bank savings account at this point. And it shows them the power of compounding and the value of letting their money earn money in a way that you're in control of. Now, you might choose to cap your bank out higher or lower, depending on your interest in being a banker to your children and your willingness to pay some kind of a meaningful rate. But what we've done there is we've done the Bank of Dad up to $1,000, earning 10%. And then we've had the kids open credit union checking accounts with their own debit cards and have encouraged them to save their second $1,000 in their checking account. And then we've gone beyond that and have encouraged them to begin doing financial investing or investing in private business once they have their $1,000 in the Bank of Dad and their $1,000 in their credit union checking account. So that is how we've handled banking with the kids. And it's been a great teaching tool. The other thing is then they have money to pay when they like break off the car's side mirror with their bicycle, getting it in and out of the garage or something like that, which has definitely happened, or to repair the garage door when they crash into it. The other thing that I wanted to mention, you know, it touched on private business and working, but I wanted to share with you how we have actually done that in our family. So I have one child who has founded and launched the Small Batch Homeschool Roaster. He's my most entrepreneurial guy, and he has run a real business there, ordering green coffee with his own money and roasting it to order. So that's an example of a business that we've done. I have a daughter who has done more the employment thing, working as a regular after-school babysitter for a family in the neighborhood. She's done this for about 4 to 8 hours per week and is able to earn, you know, a few hundred dollars a month doing that. And then my third guy, he's the youngest. His favorite thing is to work in the yard. So he works for me in our yard and then opportunistically in neighbors' yards. And I'll just tell you, if you live in a neighborhood where there is work to be done and where the families have the wherewithal to hire your kids to do that, your neighbors will love to hire your children because your children are responsible, well-spoken, know what they're doing, are interested in learning, are interested in delivering value for their work. And there is a world of opportunity out there in pet sitting, house sitting as they get older, grass cutting, babysitting, selling coffee, leaf raking, almost anything you can imagine. In Amy and I's conversation, we also touched on some book recommendations, and I wanted to offer one more in this space. It's called The $100 Startup by Chris Guillebeau. A bunch of ideas on micro businesses, some of which are suitable for your children, some of which are not suitable for your children, but it might get the creative juices flowing. All right, that's my appended comment to Amy and I's conversation. I hope you've enjoyed it. I would love to be in touch on the web, either through Facebook or LinkedIn or at designindependence.com. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening in on this week's Homeschool Conversation. For show notes and links to all the resources we discussed, head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-podcast. conversations. And if these episodes are an encouragement to you, would you take a moment to leave a rating and review and to share it with your friends? I am so thankful that you are here on this adventure with me. Let's repent of our constant striving, relish the joy of learning, and rest in the work of Christ on our behalf. Stand fast, my friends.